Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hot round! Red 7, red 7, red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what red 7 means.
I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
You don't think that lame-ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch!
Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
That's gonna make the difference between winning and losing!
Welcome into 11 Personnel with Nick Roush and Adam Luckett. We are 1 week into the Kentucky football preseason, and we're happy to be brought to you by our good friends at La Rosa. It's time to try new wings, and why not some pizza too? La Rosa's has you covered for game day and any day in between with over 40 menu items, whether it's pizza, wings, hoagies, fries, and desserts. You can take your Caturday up to the next level. Visit LaRosa's.com right now to order pickup, delivery, or just join them in the dining room. Some of Cincinnati's finest now in Central Kentucky. Check out your local LaRosa's today. Local LaRosa's, man. I'm still getting the tongue twisters down like it, but it's worth it because LaRosa's is just delicious.
Anyone who's ever been to a Reds game is very familiar with LaRosa's Pizza. Now they've got Lexington one or two locations, I believe.
I think it's three now.
Locations in Lexington. I mean, so yeah, you can check it out. I haven't digged into the breadsticks or anything like that, or the wings. Gonna have to get over there to try them out. But La Rosa's Pizza, yeah, we'll get the job done for you for sure.
The last time I was we had two extra large La Rosa's at a friend's house in Cincinnati, and we decided we'd rather eat more pizza than go out and have a good time. It was like, we're good. I guess this has been a heck of a night.
Well, we knew we were getting overserved, just didn't know it was going to be on pizza tonight. One of those nights.
Let's talk a little football. Last time we talked, it was right after the open scrimmage. I think you can hear all of that on the KSR football podcast feed with Freddie Maggard. But it was quite a newsy week, surprisingly, especially a newsy Tuesday. Didn't expect to hear about position changes and all sorts of stuff coming right out of the gate.
No, did not. This position changes have just been kind of crazy. There's some positionless football vibes going on over there. I mean, you just look at the running back position now. Torrance Davis, linebacker, moves back to running back. Now you got Michael Drennan, the second, going from slot receiver to running back. Now he was an all-purpose back listed. I'm coming out of Dublin Kaufman High School. They're in the Columbus area. So, yeah, a lot of tinkering going on by Liam Cohen for sure, which I think – you know, we'll see how all this stuff works out. But there was some complaints about lack of creativity and all that. And though that's not going on. Like there's some mad scientist stuff that they're cooking up over there right now. And I think if you just kind of looking at this, the flexibility they're showing, I think that could result on game day that they might be willing to try to do a little bit more stuff, maybe see some more gadget play stuff like that.
Yeah, and so I mean, when I heard Drennan was moving to running back, I think there was some reason for pause. You know, you've got this loaded running back room, but you don't have any receivers. So, like, wait, come on, does this really make sense? But I think long term, like the kid, it almost reminds me of like Josh Pascal in that little tweener stage,
right?
Where, you know, he's a great running back with some really good receiving tools, but maybe those weren't just translating that well to slot. The thing is if you line him up as a running back, then he can really have an upper hand on whoever's guarding him. So, like, you know, for instance, he was just sharing some videos of him running routes one-on-one, but instead of doing one-on-one routes with a, you know, a nickel cornerback, he's doing them against a linebacker, which he would see more, you know, if he's lining up out of the backfield initially and motioning it out. So I think you can create some more mismatches there. And, you know, with the outside zone, like long-term, he might not be getting a ton of carries this fall. I can't imagine him doing that. But long-term, this right. could end up benefiting him more by playing running back.
The way we saw Jatah McClain be used at Kentucky Fan Day in the open practice, you can foresee him succeeding in that type of role. I mean, it's very kind of Alvin Kamara light, and, you know, in a very, very light standard where it's more like he's getting more receptions and targets than carries. And they're splitting them out and they're doing some different stuff with him in the pass game, trying to take advantage of some matchups. I mean, it's a very NFL kind of thought process to me, is trying to take advantage of using your backs in the passing game. And so I think that's what you're kind of seeing from that. I think that there's going to be a concerted effort to get those guys involved in the passing game, to get the backs some targets. And then now I think when you look at the 2020 wide receiver class, only guy left standing is my dude, Ernest.
Oh, Ernie.
Khalil Branham's out. Isaiah Cummings at tight end. Drennan moved to a slot. That got thin really, really quick.
Well, and it also, you got to think that they feel good about the new guys coming in as well.
Right.
Yeah. But, man, it is funny you mentioned how many that was. It also was kind of, you know, we found out this news, I think, actually from Vince. But, you know, we were speaking to John Settle, and he was like, you know, I used to always joke with him that I'm going to end up moving to running back. And, well, I wasn't joking. Because he was at Wisconsin, recruited him to play running back at Wisconsin, and Settle might have lost the battle, but he's going to win the war, by God.
Yeah, and that shows that that position coach is pretty invested in him. So I think that's a good thing probably long-term for Drennan
for
the future.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And you mentioned Cummings and his position change too. Some of the quotes we got about that did not – like Mark Stoops – always hesitant to provide effusive praise, but between him and Vince, I mean, even Vince is a PT Barnum of sorts.
Yeah, no doubt.
But like, he kind of was like, you could tell he wanted to pump the brakes when he was talking about Isaiah. He's like, you know, I kind of always thought he'd be a tight end, but man, I didn't. I actually was expecting worse, you know, about what he's shown us so far. So they did not hesitate to throw him the ball at open practice, and he has not hesitated to rise to the occasion. So I think that's a great development because, let's be frank, Luckett, he's going to catch more balls this year as a tight end than he would have as wide receiver.
This is a victory lap for the 11 Personnel Podcast. We have been talking about Isaiah Cummings being switched to tight end probably since he signed.
Yeah.
Like, it's been a long time. We've talked about it multiple times this offseason. And then when we met in our little makeshift studios down there at the Courtyard Marriott in Hoover on Tuesday of SEC Media Day week, when we learned Upshaw was out, we went on there and said, you just need to stop messing around and just move Cummings to tight end. And that they did. And now we're seeing him hit some checkpoints, I think, here early, which is a great sign. I think he has NFL potential there. He can create mismatch advantages. And like Liam Cohen said at Kentucky Media Day, was like, there is going to be some value there for what he can bring. And I love that aspect, but he's got to, you know, it's up to him how much capacity and stuff he could have
to
translate the position. And well, so far it's going about as well as I think you could hope for it to go.
You also forgot to mention too, that you taught Nick Saban what 12 personnel is. So, I mean, big time 12 personnel podcast over here. We just love our tight ends.
We have to, on our logo here, we'll just mark out the second one and write a two over it, black ink or something.
Over it.
Yeah.
You know, it's good to see like that. It's been a pretty quick reaction, and it's also, peeled behind the curtains. We were doing some position previews before this, and there's one thing that just kind of struck a chord that where all the wires crossed at once. Perfect synergy in my brain. The receivers consider this offense pretty simple to learn. You talked about the capacity, Luckett, to what I think that's going to help get guys like Dekel Crowdis and stuff on the field where, hey, if we can get them to where they know only – they don't got to know the whole thing. But if they know a few things, I can dial up some plays to get them open. So I think that we can be confident enough that Cohen can get that done and make it simple for some of these talented young athletes.
A little KISS strategy going over there. Keep it simple, stupid. So they're just trying, I think, especially for those freshmen, maybe not asking them to do a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think Wandell Robinson and Ali, they probably have a lot more on their plate.
Right.
Then maybe some of these other guys. Maybe these other guys are just asking them to do just focus on this or that ABC. So maybe that's a way they can get on the field. And I think that 2021 class, you talk Dekel Crowdis, you talk Chris Lewis, you talk Chauncey Magwood. I think all three of those guys are going to have a legitimate shot at getting some snaps this season.
And I think the guy who's going to be throwing it to him is Will Levis because Vince kind of spilled the beans. Stoops did not want to talk too much about quarterbacks. You know, Cohen was adamant and,
literally minutes after Cohen
was like,
he's not getting handed the job.
Yeah.
He's going to have to earn it.
Then Vince just like, yeah, I think Levis has got it. But you know what though? I mean, here's the thing. All of those can be true. Like Cohen can say that Will is earning his starting job without handing it to him, but it's just because he's better. Like Vince can also say he's throwing the ball better because he is. Like,
right.
And what we saw on Saturday, Levis had a much better day than Gatewood. So all of those can be true. It's just kind of, it's funny to hear that from Vince one weekend because, Gatewood was his guy. And I mean, he's a guy that, Vince helped bring to Kentucky, and Vince has always kind of been in his corner, pushing for him. So quite a sharp turn for the big dog.
Yeah, when you look at Will Levis, the biggest thing for him in this was just probably going to be winning the team over on kind of short notice. Getting in there and the team kind of buying in, all right, this is the best quarterback, this is who we need to win. It sounds like his play in practice is probably doing that. I think some people mm-hmm. are coming away pretty impressed. So far, I'll be interested to see if we get any type of buzz out of this first scrimmage that's scheduled to take place on Saturday.
Right.
But I think he's just hitting the checkpoints they want him to hit. And like it gets back to, he was added for a reason. He was always, I think, the heavy favorite to start. And I think we're starting to see that play out a little bit in the beginning of fall camp.
Yeah. That scrimmage Saturday, we spoke with the defense early Thursday. And instead of rushing back to like type up something because there was breaking news, a lot of the defense was, we'll find out when we can tackle them, when we're taking them to the ground, because they went 5 days in a row to start. They put on their pads towards, I think on that fifth day, today's day seven. I think that, they're doing the, what do you call it? Button up or what was the phrase you all used? Where you hit them and you kind of wrap up, but you don't.
You just kind of buck them. It's not really
buck them. There's a more football-y sounding term.
Like tap off. It's kind of what it was called. One hit and then you're done. Don't kick anybody to the ground.
And so like you can't really tell a lot with the defense, but to go back to your beloved sub package, Luckett, the other thing you've been hitting on forever. Today we talked to Devontae Robinson and Yusuf Corker. Devontae Robinson is a guy that I had written off that I shouldn't have, because part of his problem wasn't, like he said today, physically I was there last year, but mentally with COVID and everything, like coming off the injury, I think a good parallel is Darius West, who had just some horrific injuries. I mean, like his legs were all shattered all to hell. In that first year, that 2017 season, he was good, but he missed his angles were off. He just didn't have the timing, the feeling down. And then in that 2018 season, I mean, he was the unsung hero of that defense, the guy we didn't talk about enough, who, if he plays in that first half against Tennessee, Kentucky could win that game. he was incredible. And I don't know if we can expect that kind of production from Robinson, but I think we can, just the way that they can interchange guys, move from nickel to free to strong. I think having a Robinson that is back to feeling like his old self, along with a bunch of other experienced guys, offenses are going to have a lot of trouble identifying just what coverages. I mean, Kentucky, look at, for all Stoops's great, I mean, Kentucky can play some boring defense. It's good, boring defense. They don't do a lot of confusion stuff, but I think with the amount of experience they have at the positions they have it in, they really can throw offenses more curveballs than they ever have before with Mark Stoops.
2018, Devontae Robinson, as a redshirt sophomore, got his first real playing time, was kind of the sixth defensive back, but played a lot. I think he started a couple of games. PFF graded him out for the season at 75.5. Was one of the better grades on that defense that year. Like, he was a budding star heading into 2019. He has a freak quadriceps injury. Then last year, he just wasn't himself all season. And I think it's kind of a lesson for us as we enter this year, setting expectations for J.J. Weaver. He's coming off a major knee injury. He just now started practicing. He probably won't start playing real physical contact tackle football here for a few more weeks. And even when he does, it's going to take him a while to kind of adjust on that knee. Because of that, I think that we get back to sub packages is going to be a huge part of this defense. I think you're going to see them play a lot of kind of 3-3-5 type looks. Maybe that's not much edge rushing, but that you can bring a fourth rusher, but it can come from anywhere. It could come from any blitzer. You can do some like zone blitz stuff. And then you can use, I think you can get play a third safety, middle safety, and do some creative stuff with maybe Vito Tisdale or Joe Williams or something like that. But a key part in all of that, I think, is Devontae Robinson. They have to have him out there, and they have to feel comfortable, I think, at using him at multiple spots. And I just think he's a key part of this defense. And I think it's very, very good news early that we're hearing he's back to his normal self.
Man, the really is a freak accident when you just tear a quad lifting. It's kind of like Upshaw with his pec, you know?
Right.
Like, that could be another one that takes a while. At least in Upshaw's case, you know, it's not something. I feel like lower body versus upper body really is a whole different animal.
Yeah, I think so.
Especially right. Mentally, just cutting and moving around. But
you're not using your pectoral, your chest is just there. I think the only reason you would be worried is maybe blocking and getting tackled. But running routes, stuff like that, I think he would be fine. But where quadricep, it's, you know, you're on your leg every second of every practice snap, whatever. So, and it's a weird injury. You don't know. I mean, I don't see in football many guys tearing their quad.
Right, right. You get like bruised quad in the NFL.
The strain,
and it's
right.
Like, yeah, right. Something, you know, some nasty, you know, contusion. But the one thing that it was kind of weird too, Luckett, that I've enjoyed, as much as I like, you know, busting Fortner and Rig up, Robinson is year six, right? So he's probably
super
like
senior. Year six.
23,
2016 class.
Yeah, mm-hmm. 23, 24 years old. You have Yusuf Corker back there. Corker's married and has a kid. Like, it's just, right. It's different talking to some of these guys. I mean, DeAndre Square, when he first got to Kentucky, great player, very shy talking to us. He went from 2-3 words an answer to now he's just an adult out there. And it's, I think the experience, sometimes we can, you know, beat that drum maybe a little bit too loudly, but man, to have it in so many different places, like, we need to get to, this will segue us nicely into our next topic with Chris Rodriguez and the Vampires. But the quote I got today was that this is a much more player-led team. And I think it's just more pervasive than what it previously was, because as Chris Rodriguez said, there were some vampires out there sucking the life out of the team.
You just look at the defense in general. There's some gams over there. There's some grown-ass men. Devontae Robinson, super senior. Redshirt seniors. Tyrell Asian. Yusuf Corker at safety. Cedric Dort Jr. at cornerback. Jordan Wright at edge. Josh Pascal at defensive line. Potentially Abuli Abadi Fitzgerald at the other boundary tackle starting. You look at just true seniors, fourth-year seniors. Marquand McCall at nose. DeAndre Square at will. Jaquez Jones at Mike. That's a lot of experience and old heads kind of in a locker room. Yeah. So we haven't really asked this. It's got to be the oldest defense Mark Stoops has ever coached. I can't imagine the defense being older than this. And so I get that as a coach, and when it's player led like that, that just gives you a lot more freedom. Mm-hmm. Like I've kind of gone through, I think they're going to be able to get a little more complex this year. And I think that's why you've seen Stoops and Brad White be excited about this group and be willing to do some more, I think, creative stuff. I think the pressure package we see from Kentucky, I think is going to be more extensive than what we've seen in the past. And I think that's why they're pretty excited about coaching them. And that's why I've always been on this defense is going to be better than a lot of people are thinking side of the fence all offseason, because they are just so old. I think they're going to be able to do some things, and then they're still going to be able to keep up with that big play prevention. And I think they're going to have a really solid year on that side of the ball. But to the Vampires, that was a very interesting comment.
Yeah.
Chris Rodriguez. And to me, that had to be on the offensive side, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You look at all the guys that just transferred. I mean, that's where your head goes.
Right, right. He said, when I first got here, you could tell everybody was clued in. Over the past few years, everybody has started to come together. First, we had a lot of people that were doing it, but we had a lot of people we called vampires, where they just sucked the blood out of the team. Like, they don't really want to practice. They don't care to be there. Even if they're not playing, like scout team guys, they're like, I don't like coming to practice. So now you're getting a little bit more buy-in on that offensive side of the ball, where there's not as much. Because, look, it only takes one turd in the punch bowl to make me not want to drink it. So I'm not going to, I can see how even Joe backup can bring down the vibe of a team, especially for younger guys who are, calling, scratching, trying to get there. So, I don't know if we need to have a segment where we just try to pick out the vampires by name, but, to hear it from Rodriguez, who's typically not the most candid guy, like that's significant. That's significant.
Yeah. They might have pulled out of South Florida for a reason.
I think that's safe to say, like it. But we don't need to suck any more life out of you. We do need to give you some updates from around training camps in the SEC. And like it, I think the most significant development is down at South Carolina.
Yeah, there's really two of them I think we should focus on. It's South Carolina and Tennessee. Really, South Carolina, star running back Kevin Harris they're calling a minor back procedure.
Which, okay, hold up. Minor back procedure? That minor back, that does not exist. There's no such thing as a minor back procedure. Mm-hmm.
So they're a week in the fall camp. They're right on the same timeline as Kentucky, and he hasn't practiced with the team yet. And if they're on Kentucky's schedule, they should be having their first scrimmage on Saturday. And he hasn't been out there yet.
I mean,
when he gets out there, they're not just going to throw him in full pads and say,
run
power right quick. So that's not good. Now they open with an FCS team, I believe. Week two, they go to East Carolina.
They do have a friendly, if they can win that East Carolina game.
Yeah, that's
they have
a
pretty
one,
friendly start to their schedule.
I might be on the Purple Pirates that week.
Oh,
that's a tricky one. Now their win total, I think we're going to get a win total. So they can get 3.5. So obviously expectations are super low at South Carolina, but that's not good. I mean, he's their whole kind of offensive attack. Now, Marshawn Lloyd, top 50 recruit out of the DMV, who's coming off an ACL injury. He's back and he's going through football for the first time with a big knee brace. So their expectations are high for him. But if Harris isn't good to go, I think that's a worry. And I think you have to pump the brakes kind of on him coming back from a back surgery. What does that mean? What does that look like? So that's danger, I think, for Shane Beamer.
He was going to be your bell cow. He was going to get you to where you could contend for it. And you don't want, that guy carried the crap out of the ball. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he was 20 plus a game last year. Like, his body's got some wear and tear on it. Now you've got a back surgery in there.
Was probably the most explosive running back in the SEC last year.
He beat Rodriguez in yards, rushes of 20 yards or more. I had that say. He had 11 last year. Rodriguez had 8. But here's another thing, too, if you're Beamer, why rush him back? I'd rather have him good to go next year, then having him like jack up his back again, and then you've wasted an all SEC type performer. So,
and then week three, they go to Georgia right before they host Kentucky.
Yeah, that. Whew.
Yeah,
could be rough there for the Gamecocks.
And then on the other side of the ball, they scored a big recruiting win in the transfer portal. Caron Prunty was a freshman All-American at Kansas. Didn't give up a touchdown pass last year. Was really one of the few good players on Kansas's team. He transfers to South Carolina, arrives in July. He's entered the transfer portal again for unknown reasons. So he's out. He's no longer there at South Carolina. And when you look at South Carolina as a team, really on the line of scrimmage, they should be fine to good on both sides. Their running back position should be a position of strength, but their back seven and like their receivers and quarterback are in rough shape in the SEC. And so that takes out a potential plus player, I think, at cornerback, and just it's a tough gig right now, I think, at South Carolina. They're not a lot of good news coming out of Columbia early for Beamer.
No, not not whatsoever. Not a lot of good news coming out of Tennessee either. Can you look up that first scrimmage, what they were saying? Or no, that was the spring game. I'm mistaken that for their first
they
scrimmage.
They had their first scrimmage today, actually.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the spring game whenever the quarterbacks were just – there was like a hilarious tweet about how they've gotten like 3 first downs in 7 series or something ridiculous like that. But that was in the spring. I'm getting a little ahead of myself. But Brian Maher.
I was hoping you would remember that because that's how I was gonna introduce
just
Maher.
Yeah, he's Maher. You got the Brian Maher. He's gone. He's left the program. The guy that Butch Jones loved to put in for Jeremy Pruitt loved to put in. Man, the rotating door at Tennessee is just hilarious. He loved to put in Maher for Garantano whenever Garantano would screw up, and then Maher would screw up some more. Turns out Maher, not good either. He's gone. It took him 5 days before he realized, like, I'm fourth string behind Harrison Bailey, Hendon Hooker, and Joe Melton. Like, they're not even going to give me a chance, so I'm getting the hell out of here before school even starts. So he left the program pretty quickly.
Yeah, it was kind of a surprise, I think, that Josh Heupel kept 4 scholarship quarterbacks, kept them that happy through spring and summer, that they all wanted to go out and play in fall camp. They brought in Michigan transfer Joel Milton. He's kind of the favorite to win that starting job. I think what you're going to see is him, and then you're going to have Virginia Tech transfer Hendon Hooker kind of be their gadget quarterback. And then you got Harrison Bailey and Maher. I guess he got relegated to third string pretty quick, and he just – hit the deuces and he's out. He's gonna be in the portal.
Wasn't that bad either, Virginia Tech. I know it's a different
The scheme is not that's an RPO read option, probably quarterback, I would imagine. They need to heavy play action offense. Where Tennessee it's the Art Briles offense. It's either run it or spread it out, and we're not really attacking the middle of the field. We're either running screens or we're just throwing bombs deep down the sideline. And I don't think that's really Hooker's strength. And that's why Milton, I think, is a favorite, because he's got a rocket launcher on his right shoulder.
This segment where we've just talked about Tennessee, the subtle slips of the tongue, like UCF or Butch Jones. Like, if you're a Tennessee fan, like, you just got to be like, God, what the hell? Like, what is going on here?
Tennessee's weird. Because you look at their schedule and it is manageable. If they beat Pitt in the non-conference, they can get to 6-6. And then that's a very good season. Because, you know, you got Vandy, you get South Carolina at home. Obviously, the Alabama draw is tough. You get Ole Miss at home. That's not great, but it's not terrible of all the things you could get out of the West. And then you got 3 easy non-conference games outside of Pitt. So, like, you could kind of maybe get your way there to 6 wins, but they're on such a thin line because of all the transfers. Like, they have to have like 60 something scholarship players. And then today there's projected starting left tackle. Heupel announced he's out for a surgery. He's going to be out for an extended period of time. Caron Calvert, I think is his name. Now, he was the just 7-8 months ago, he was the third left tackle because Wanya Morris moved to Oklahoma and then Jameer Johnson moved to Texas A&M. So they're already on their fourth offensive tackle from what Jeremy Pruitt would have had, you know, 9 months ago or whatever.
Right.
At left tackle. So they're just like a few. I mean, it's just they're like 3 or 4 injuries away from the whole thing just blowing up. And then who knows what could happen to the team. So they're just going to be fascinating to watch because I think that schedule opens up some things where they could get to a bowl game, maybe, you know, go and have a party, maybe win. And then they could really sell that to the next recruiting class, or it could just go the other way and they could fall off a cliff. So just fascinating to see how that season goes for Heupel.
We need to get to win totals, but one thing I did want to mention before you mentioned the amount of transfers, the amount of people at the University of Louisville. I think Eric Crawford crunched the numbers, and if you count people who had COVID eligibility, they have, is it 60 players that are technically freshmen?
Yeah, Satterfield said like 70, but yeah, it was. I don't know if his math was exactly right, but
right. Yeah. That's bad. Like, I get that you're like, oh, we've got freshmen, but no, like, you can't have that many freshmen. They're going to get chewed up and that's why
you've heard the roster management issues some coaches have had with these scholarship numbers, because you're only allowed 25 per class, and then it's going to create where you're going to have so many scholarships, you're not going to be able to fit. It's going to, because of the COVID rule, it's going to create all these in the transfer new market, it's going to create all these mathematical problems for filling out a class each year.
Right.
To know how to balance your scholarship. Yeah, and Satterfield's been one of the guys that's really spoken out about that. But yeah, they had 70-something freshmen, I think he said, when they opened up fall camp.
And you know what, Luckett? This is a great way to segue into our win total segment. We're going to share some of our favorite bets. And I really I'm not going to go big on it, because I don't think the ACC is that great. But Louisville is at 6.5. Mm-hmm. The thing is I gave them the benefit of the doubt. But, like, I can count 5 wins pretty easily.
Yeah, for sure.
But there's a lot of toss-ups out. Like, you know, obviously losing to Clemson. But I think really the rest of them are toss-ups.
Yeah.
And that's why the ACC. That's why I think it would be fun to play it, because I don't see him beating Ole Miss or UCF. And then things can really snowball from there. If you know, you get Florida State rallying around Mike Norvell, or, you know, they've kind of, Louisville's had trouble with Virginia over the years, and you know, NC State was pretty good last year. So I don't know where a lot of those teams are going to fall in the pecking order, but I always like betting against Louisville because I'm putting my money where my mouth is and loving a Louisville loss and helping it benefit me financially.
Yeah, Louisville under 6.5 was one of my many I wrote down. Didn't make my final 5 for this, but I think I'm going to have 10, and I'm going to put on Twitter for all you degenerates out there.
Ooh, so nice.
If you're looking for some more than just 5, I've got a little deep dive for you. But yeah, Louisville, it all comes down, Nick, is that UCF game, that Friday. That's the swing game to me. If they win that, I think Louisville, like, the goal should be, can we just get to 7-5 this year and then build for next year? But the UCF's a swing game, because then they're staring at a 1-2 start if they lose UCF, and they got back-to-back road trips to Florida State, Wake Forest right after that, before hosting Virginia at home. It could just get bad right there.
Get real gnarly, yeah.
And then if that's the case and then you lose those two, you're 1-4, and then you might have lack of buy-in with everything that's gone on
right
around there. And so the start is the key. I have them under 6.5. I would have loved it. It used to be 7. Like, if you could have got this at 7, it would have felt like a take it to the bank type of wager, because, like I said, I think the ceiling is 7-5. You mentioned that's the life in the ACC. It's just, there's a lot of toss up games that can go either way. You could, if everything bounces right, you get some turnover luck, you can maybe get to 8-4. But if something bounces wrong, you miss some kicks or whatever, you could go 5-7. So that's kind of the world they're living in.
Yeah. It's anyone's guess with some of those toss-up games in the ACC. But, what's one of your final 5s?
Yeah, the first one I'll start with, I'm going out west to the Pac-12. Stanford plays, I believe, 11 or 12 Power 5 teams this year. It's 12, They have 9 conference games, 3 non-conference Power 5 opponents.
I think one of them is Notre Dame, right?
Yeah, Notre Dame to end the season at home. But their total is only 4. 4 games. One of their non-conference games is at Vanderbilt, which should be a win.
Yeah.
They open with Kansas State. Like, if they win that Kansas State game, they're clearing 4. If they don't, I still think they can get to 5. The Pac-12 is not super gnarly. I think I trust David Shaw enough. So I'm going to go Stanford over 4. That's -110 right now, so pretty decent odds. That's too small. I know their schedule is just absolutely ridiculous, but they're gonna pull at least one upset or two, and then I think they can finagle their way to 5 or 6. So give me Stanford over 4.
Okay, I'll give you Stanford over 4. Will you give me LSU under 8.5?
Yeah, I like that. I like that. I had LSU 8-4 when I drew it out, so there wasn't enough cushion there for me, but I like that.
Well, because here's the thing, Luckett. I think the path to getting 9, like to get over that, you're only like you're going to lose to Alabama and you're going to lose to A&M in my mind. I don't see them being. I just don't think they're built like those other two teams are. That portal's been brutal to them. So, and then from there, you have toss-up games. Now, granted, 2 of these 3 are, you know, hell. Here's 4 toss-up games. Auburn at home, Florida at home, at Kentucky, at Ole Miss, at Mississippi State. There's your 5 big I gave you up 5 there. I could see them winning like only one of those. You know, I just don't trust Max Johnson. I don't trust Coach O. I don't trust it enough to say that they're going to be able to take care of business on the road and in rivalry games at home. Maybe they win some of those rivalry games at home, but are they going to be able to outscore the Lane train? Like,
yeah,
I can't see them getting to that 9th one.
Yeah. That Ole Miss trip, that's their 8th game in 8 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, so they're going to be pretty tired when they go to Oxford.
Lane's going to run them up and down, man. Right. Yeah.
That week 1 game at UCLA, man, it's so tricky. UCLA plays week 0 at home against Hawaii. So they're going to get a game under their belts before LSU comes out there. And that's a game we talked about. Either LSU is going to go there and lose it, or they're going to win by 17 to me. I don't think there's kind of any in between. So that kind of sets the stage. But yeah, S&P Plus had LSU outside the top 25 preseason at 26. So the advanced numbers aren't huge on this LSU team. And then playing the SEC West, yeah, it kind of feels like an 8-4 team. So 8.5, I like. If you could get it at 9, I would really love that. Take that under because 9, you got the push insurance there. But, yeah, I think we're entering an 8-4 type 7-5 season for LSU, and then it becomes what happens to Orgeron if that happens.
Right, right. And a lot of it depends on off the – you know, what happens off the field as well, you know, like how – portal, all that sort of nonsense too, you know. So Luckett, what do you got up next?
Okay, we're going back to the ACC, and my guy Jeff Hafley, man, I gotta do it. Boston College coming off a real impressive debut season. The season total is 7. I feel very good about this team getting to 7. I think they could have a potential breakthrough top 25 season, 8-4, 9-3. Look at their schedule. They got 3 really easy non-conference games to start off. Colgate at UMass, at Temple. They get Missouri at home. They can win that game, I think, against Missouri. And then the ACC, like we talked about. So if you got 3 right there, then they only have to get to 4-4 to push. I think they can get there. Road trips to Georgia Tech, Louisville, Syracuse are all winnable games. I think BC's going to get to 8-4, 9-3, and Jeff Hafley's going to be like a huge coaching candidate. And if Michigan opens, I think he might be the top target for the Wolverines. So give me Boston College over 7. You have to lay $1.30 right now. So it's there's some juice to that over. So that's getting some steam. But I like the Eagles this year.
Man, so part of my process is like I want to bet against some teams that I think overperformed a year ago. Especially right. Last year where there was some weird COVID kind of oddities. Coastal Carolina and Liberty are both tempting, but they bring in their quarterbacks back, which is significant. In Liberty, they've got a showdown. Like that number at 9 is awfully high, especially with trips to Ole Miss. But like Syracuse is terrible. They'll get up and beat
that
them.
Game's not being talked about enough.
Yeah,
like Hugh Freeze is going to Ole Miss to play.
That is going to be
an NFL quarterback. Two NFL quarterbacks going. That's not getting enough attention. But that game is going to be like it's probably one of the 10 to 15 most must watch games of the season.
Yeah, no doubt about it too. And the pressure's really going to be on Lane there. The one that I want to go against though is the darling of college football media, and that is our boy up at Iowa State, which now I can't even – Matt Campbell. Like, they're over-under set at 9.5. You mean to tell me that Iowa State's going to win that many games this year?
Yeah. I mean, they haven't beaten Iowa yet, and if Iowa beats them earlier, they're not getting there.
That's week two.
If they win that game, they can get there. It'll be close, but if the Hawks can – knock off the Cyclones again, you could pretty much cash that ticket early.
Yeah, I mean, they've got to go to Oklahoma. They at least get Texas at home. But, like, man, and they got a weird road trip to UNLV, and the Running Rebs got old Tathan Martell out there. So you never know what could happen. Things get weird out in the desert. But I just – especially after losing their quarterback as well, like, it's not the most in-depth, but I'm not buying that Iowa State. I'm not buying the Matt Campbell hike. Get the hell out of here, Matt Campbell. Under for your fighting Matt Campbells at Iowa State.
Yeah, speaking of former SEC coaches, over in Orlando, Gus Malzahn takes over for the UCF Knights. And if you go back to our coaching carousel pod, that was a hire I wasn't huge on. I just think the fit's overall a little weird. Well, the season total is 9.5 for UCF.
That's a lot.
-110.
With Cincinnati in your conference?
I'm pulling up their schedule right now. You got the road trip to Louisville. So I know I'm contradicting myself there a little bit. but you got the road trip to Louisville. You open with Boise State at home on a Thursday. I think they'll win that game, but that's not for sure. Road trips to Navy, Cincinnati, Temple, SMU. So I you could see them being a dog at SMU and at Cincinnati. They get Memphis at home. I think they're 9.5 is a lot. I don't see 10-2 on with this schedule. I think 9-3 is probably set. 8-4, 9-3 is what they're probably going to be. So, yeah, give me the under in Gus's first year. 9.5 is a lot. And Gus hasn't won – he hasn't won more than, he's lost at least 4 games, like how many years in a row at Auburn.
Yeah.
Where they're going 8-4 pretty much every year. So, I feel pretty good about that under 9.5. That just seems too large.
Yeah, I feel like we're haters because we keep picking unders, but I've got another under, and it's a sad under, and it's Louisiana Monroe under 1.5. This team, they're going to be bad.
Bad, yeah.
And they got to win 2 games. They have a pretty tough schedule. Not only do they have Kentucky, but they got to play Coastal, Liberty.
Coach Prime Time.
Yeah, Coach Prime is their FCS game. Like, you don't mean to tell me that they're going to be hyped for that game?
Right.
Coach Prime's probably got more talent on his team than Louisiana Monroe does. And that's supposed to be their gimme FCS win. So, I ultimately think that'll be Coach Prime rising, being his headline stealing one. I mean, they're going to get – like, they end the schedule with LSU and Lafayette. They're going to get ran off the field. This is – and not to mention that, like, Terry Bowden's missing a couple weeks of the preseason, RIP – to Bobby B, a legend of the game gone. But I'm being a hater. Louisiana Monroe under 1.5 wins.
Yeah, their non-conference is brutal. I mean, at Kentucky, Liberty at home, which is pretty much an unwinnable game, then at LSU. That's 3 really tough non-cons. And then you throw in Jackson State. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to see them, winning. The only thing I hate about if they win the Jackson State game, they really only need 1 conference win.
Yeah, that's all. I mean, 1.5.
But
yeah,
the thing about the Sun Belt, it's better than a lot of people think it is. Like, a lot of these teams are pretty solid teams, like Troy, Georgia State. I think South Alabama's got a chance to be okay. Arkansas State. Those are all games they get at home. Can they get one of those? Maybe they can get Butch on November 13th. But they have a tough schedule because their bye is week 2. So they have 11 games in a row. So it's kind of like that Mark Stoops 2014 season where they had, 10 games to end the regular season. That's tough. And that makes me think that the under is probably the best play there because that's just a lot of games in a row.
Luckett, do you have an over for us with that?
Yeah, well, I've had two overs. I had over Stanford, over BC, but that UCF was my only under in this top
okay,
five.
Okay, I'm like exclusively picking unders. Don't worry, okay, I have at least good. One.
I got four overs, and then you're riding okay. the under
train. Yeah, there we go.
Okay, I'm going back to the ACC, Pittsburgh this year. We talked about that big matchup against Tennessee. Their total is also seven, -125, so you got to lay $1.25. But Pittsburgh's got a super senior quarterback. They got stability on both coaching staffs. Pat Narduzzi's been there a while, but he hasn't had like the breakthrough season yet. I think this year could be that for the Panthers. They've got a pretty manageable non-conference. I'm trying to pull up their schedule right now. But they've got Narduzzi here lately. His defenses have been really good.
Mm-hmm.
And Jordan Addison is a receiver that's going to be a pro. He's only a sophomore, had a big season last year as I pull up their schedule. The road games at Georgia Tech is a win. Like at Duke, I think, is a win. At Syracuse is a win. So they got a pretty manageable road slate right there. And then home games against Virginia, New Hampshire, Western Michigan, UMass. And then if they can get one in North Carolina, Miami, they could get to 9 wins, I think. So I think it could be a big season for Pittsburgh. So I'm taking that over 7. And then that's another one. If they beat Tennessee week 2, that thing's going over.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you can feel very good about that. So if you think they're beating Tennessee week 2, I would go ahead and lock in that over for Pitt.
One other team, this is going to be my final Hayden pick. And they're a team that it's fun to hate. We don't hate on them as much in this sport as we used to. But the Indiana Hoosiers greatly outperformed last year, and it's because they only played 5 games. If a call goes a different way against Penn State, then they're not the flavor of the month. But another coach that people love to love, they love Tom Allen. He was a high school coach. He's this raspy guy that just wants to inspire his team, yada, yada, yada. Well, they open the year at Iowa. That is going to be a tough football game. I don't know if they have the chops to go toe-to-toe with Iowa in a little cross-divisional action. They have to go to Penn State this year. You know, they're going to lose to Ohio State. But the big game for me, Luckett, they host Cincinnati in the non-conference in week 3. And you can easily see a scenario where they're starting out 1-2. Maybe, you know, they go on the road to Western Kentucky. That can be another hinky game that if you're 1-2 and then you have a close game with Western, you get the brakes beat off you by Penn State, then you start dropping games like to Michigan State or Maryland that you shouldn't lose. I think this schedule is really tough. Mm-hmm. And Michael Penix has been really injury prone, so I can't rely on him to be there for an entire season.
Yeah, that's the big thing, I think, for me.
I'm taking under 7.5 on the Hoosiers.
Yeah, this was another one. It was at 8. If you could get it at 8, it feels like a lot, similar to Louisville. But that one's on my list. Just didn't make my top 5.
It's at +115right now, as I'm seeing it, under 7.5. So
yeah, so you get some plus value there. It's just you're just fading. It makes sense to fade them this year after everything that happened last year. They've got to go to Iowa. You mentioned they get Indiana. They get Cincinnati. That's a tough one.
Yeah,
I believe they have to go to Purdue.
Right, right. So it's just, I mean, that could ultimately decide it too. Like, even in a good year, they have to win on the road in a rivalry game.
It smells like 7-5, and it will be a good year for Indiana, I think. But there's some teams wanting a little bit of a revenge. Like, they got to go to Michigan this year. Yeah. It's hard for me to see them beat Michigan 2 years in a row, especially how they thumped them last year. Penn State, they got to go to Penn State. Penn State's going to want
they're going to be get off back blood. At them. Right.
So, I like that under 7.5 for the Hoosiers. And then my last one, Nick, I'm going back to the AAC. Sonny Dykes is, I think, building some at SMU. You look at some of the recruiting success they are having. His offensive coordinator is Lincoln Riley's brother. Their new quarterback this year is going to be Oklahoma transfer Tanner Mordecai. So, it's going to be kind of a seamless transition.
Great last name.
And the total is, it's 6 right now. I just think that this team's going to go 7-5, 8-4. Like, that seems like a low total. I think this team, if things bounces right, they can compete for an AAC title. So give me SMU over 6, non-con, Abilene Christian, North Texas at home, at Louisiana Tech, at TCU. That should be 3-1.
Nothing crazy. Yeah.
Right. USF at home should be a win. Tulane at home, they're better off a bye. That should be a win. They're better than Tulane. And then Tulsa at home, that should be a win. And then you've got UCF at home, at Houston, at Memphis, at Navy are all winnable games. So, like, you could see Gum going 8-4, 9-3, and that's probably the one I feel best about. Now, you have to lay minus 150 on the juice for that six, but I feel pretty good about that SMU over six.
None of them are as good as Kentucky over seven, though. Lock it up, stamp it, smack it on the bottom. Cats, that's a – man.
And like we've talked about, the number for Kentucky, like if I was setting it, it would have been 7.5. I think that's the perfect
number. Then you get to iffy,
Right, because you know they're either going set like 7. You should feel good about 7-5, 8-4, I think.
At worst, you're getting a push here at 7. Like, very worst, and that's if things bottom out. But, like, with the experience and the way the schedule sets up, you know, we talked about it till we're blue in the face. But that's the lockin'est lock you'll ever have in – I believe Kentucky's hit the over. Last year was the first year, but we're throwing out the COVID year because
2019, 2018, they hit the over.
Yeah, and they
2017.
They definitely did. That bowl year. That was the Omar year.
You'd have to, in 2016, they for sure hit the over.
And 17, they did. Yeah. So throw out the shortened season and they've hit over.
If they didn't hit it in 2017, it was probably a push. It was probably at 7, I would imagine. So yeah, they've hit the over here frequently lately. But before we get out of here, Nick, I was thinking of something. Do we want to have adopt an 11 personnel group of five team?
Oh, like our G5 team that we're going to keep up with?
This is a Kentucky football podcast, but this would be like – this would be the team like we would watch and kind of have a vested interest in. And then we could get the whole 11 personnel nation involved on it.
So
I've thought about this.
Okay. You got some candidates for us, and maybe we can vote on it as – A fan base and figure it out next week.
Yes. So here's what I think. Like, it's got to be two options because either Maxion has to be involved. Like, you
feels Maxion like or Fun Belt, right?
We can't do this without Maxion, or it would have to be a Mountain West team so we could get like some Pac-12 after dark action.
Oh. Okay. Okay.
So obviously, New Mexico with Terry Wilson is an option.
Yep. That's an option. But are they going to be good? They were pretty bad last year.
Right. I don't, but the Mountain West is weird. Those teams fluctuate and the MAC's the same way. Like Eastern Michigan, how can we turn down Eastern? We could get E-Tough shirts and wear them around.
I love Chris Creighton too. I know people still have ill will towards him because of the Terry Wilson injury, but still.
So Kent State has spread it out, fun and gun offense and a good quarterback. They could be fun to watch and they have some interesting non-conference games. Like they play at Texas A&M to open the season and they've got a couple other ones. So those are three that kind of jumped out. I'd have to do a little more digging. We could do UNLV, jump on the Tathan train.
I will
that's probably
say
gonna be pretty bad. We could do Hawaii. So we could stay up to 1 a.m. and rainbow. You already have a Rainbow Warrior hat.
I do have a Rainbow Warriors hat. We do have Eastern Michigan's got a pretty high over under at 6.5. This could be
They've got a good quarterback returning. I think they've got every starter back.
And that might have to.
And their antics are just awesome. I mean, they're hilarious. That's probably the best football team to follow on Twitter, just because they tweet out all the crazy stuff they're doing.
Oh man! All right. Well, share your suggestions with us on Twitter at RouschKSR at Adam Luck at KSR. We need to hop on a G5 bandwagon. If you have a personal G5 team, maybe you went to, you know, this school in Ohio and it's a lot
sell
of fun.
Us.
You think they're
going
to be good?
Yes.
Sell us on it because we are going all in on a G5 team this year. This is a great idea. Like it. Love it. Absolutely love it. Man. Football.
We just have to do, and we could do a Tuesday Night Live podcast while Maxion's going on or something during the season.
do we have, let me see, is 2 weeks till week zero?
2 weeks from Saturday, yeah.
Oh, man.
Bielema Frost, 1 o'clock. Get us started.
We're almost there, folks. We're almost there. Thanks for hanging out with us today. We'll be back for more. Until then, enjoy some tasty little roasted pizza and keep it locked to KSR for updates throughout preseason practice. For Adam Luck and I'm Nick Roush. Go Cats. Go Kroger.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.